Good evening, and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program here on June 13th, 2013. I'm your host, David Katzmeyer, coming to you live, as I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Tonight, our special guest is Norma Erickson, president of SaneVax, an information group that reports on the effects, efficacy, and recorded dangers of vaccines that are widely used today. The SaneVax mission is to promote only safe, affordable, necessary, and effective vaccines and vaccination practices through education and information. We've asked Norma to come on tonight because, according to a Cycles theory, we have entered an era of reform that will last for years. This theory predicted years ago that our recently developed era of reform will be comparable to the muckrakers period at the turn of the last century and the Watergate era after 1973 that ushered in widespread reforms in politics and industry. The prediction also held that the pharmaceutical companies will receive much of this focus, making them as much of a target as continuing reforms against the oil industry. SaneVax, founded 3 years ago before our current era of reform, has gained the momentum that is forming now, and it may bear bellwether messages of growing public concerns. The Cycles of Change radio program is a non-political, non-advocacy production that offers this discussion for listener discretion to enable more informed, independent decisions. With that, Norma Erickson has more than 25 years' experience as an independent business consultant specializing in startups and corporate problem solving, and she has worked as a freelanced author focusing on healthy living articles and providing information surrounding the vaccination controversy. In a recent research, she discovered an inordinate number of girls reporting serious adverse events occurring after HPV vaccinations, and she conducted extensive research into HPV vaccines. This research led her to the creation of SaneVax Incorporated. Since its founding in 2010, SaneVax has become a strong international coalition of parents and vaccine safety advocates partnered with medical and scientific professionals who are all dedicated to making sure that consumers are informed properly for their protection. You can find out a wealth of information and some pretty interesting news at SaneVax.org. Let me spell that for you, folks. It's SaneVax.org. SaneVax.org at SaneVax. So, tonight's guest, Norma Erickson. Norma, are you there?
I am here, David. Thank you. Marvelous introduction.
Well, I thank you for being on our show tonight. And so, with that being the case, would you tell us a little bit about SaneVax and why it exists? We touched upon that on the introduction, but I would like our listeners to know just why this came about to begin with.
Actually, it's a quite interesting story, David. When I was doing some freelance work for internet websites, I came across a group of women that had been invited by the FDA to participate in a listening session to present their concerns about HPV vaccines, Gardasil in particular at that time. This listening session was scheduled for March 2010, and I contacted one of the organizers of it, Rosemary Mathis, whose daughter had been injured by Gardasil to the extent that she missed her entire eighth grade year of education due to serious adverse reactions. And she sent me a copy of the material that they presented to the FDA. The FDA did exactly what they said. They held a listening session. We waited and waited and waited for results, and after 3 months it became quite apparent that it was just that. It was a listening session. No action was going to be taken. And I couldn't believe it. I found it appalling. We're supposed to be able to trust the FDA. Those people are hired by us to protect our health.
Well, the FDA has done so much. I mentioned the turn of the century, and they have done so much to protect us from meatpacking bacteria and what is appearing on the shelves, that we've come to expect that there's going to be a ready response whenever something comes up. Now, your research has been, some of the results of your research is been done by some of the companies in question themselves. Is that not part of their own research that they hired professionals to conduct?
Yes, they. The manufacturers of the vaccines hire the researchers to conduct studies, but the problem with those studies is they're not scientifically sound. For instance, the preclinical trials for Gardasil used CIN1 and 2. Now, those, that technically means cervical intraepithelial neoplasms, which is precancerous lesions, they say. What they don't say is that CIN1, CIN2, and even CIN3 quite frequently reverse on their own without medical treatment.
Oh, so okay.
The basis for the trials doesn't give a medical consumer, or a doctor for that matter, any sound information on which to base the decision.
And it's not just how much of a good effect is out there with these vaccines that are intended to prevent illness, but are there records of people being harmed by taking these vaccines?
Oh, absolutely. And to date, there are 942 cases of people totally disabled after HPV vaccines. Now, this includes Gardasil and Cervarix, and it also includes worldwide reports, because SaneVax believes this is not a United States problem. It's a worldwide problem.
Yep.
So when we search the VAERS, we include everything that relates to HPV vaccines. We've got...
And when you say HPV vaccine, Norma, what does that encompass? Can you give us a description of what HPV vaccines in general are?
Yes, it's human papillomavirus. There are over 100 strains. Some, about 15 of these, are classified as oncogenic, which means that they can cause cancer.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is no proof that HPV by itself causes cancer ever. There also have to be other cofactors involved, like multiple sex partners, sex at an early age, multiple births, smoking, poor diet. Any one of these increases your risk factor for cervical cancer.
Yes.
Now, HPV, human papillomavirus, is very, very common. It's advertised as a sexually transmitted disease. However, there are peer-reviewed scientific studies that say it's been found in the placental cord, the umbilical cord. It's been found in lungs of newborns. One of the interesting things is in cases where men have had throat cancer and HPV virus has been present, quite frequently their spouse does not have HPV, so it may or may not be transmitted between spouses. The important thing is, the really important thing is, 90% of all HPV infections clear on their own within 2 years. No medical treatment, no medical intervention whatsoever. They just disappear.
Well, you know, there are more drugs being sold now legally, prescription, than at any time in history. So not only are people turning to medication to cure everything they have, they're also investing now in prevention and taking drugs for things they don't have in order to not get them. So if there are concerns about some of these vaccines and preventative drugs, How are these young women who have been injured by taking these drugs come to take them in the first place? Did they go to their doctor for something? How does it wind up that they start taking these medications?
With HPV vaccines, it depends on what country you're in and, as in the United States, what state you're in. Many HPV vaccinations are given through the school system, which I personally have a problem with because school nurses aren't necessarily trained to recognize a vaccine injury if it does occur. And syncope or fainting has been a very common side effect with HPV vaccines, but they have blamed it on the fact that these are teenagers that are getting the shot. And I'm sorry, I don't quite buy that one.
At what school level are the vaccines being dispersed?
At the school level, yes, they are in some states and in some countries. Scotland, for instance.
And would that be in the high school level or junior high school? Or that's, of course, that system's not used in every state. But about what age group is receiving these vaccines?
It's approved for the 9 to 26 age group. So
yes.
Any grade above 9 years old, which theoretically could be third grade, it could be offered. In Scotland, it's offered to junior high students. In Scotland, they have an advantage. Their parents are sent home a permission slip, but that permission slip doesn't outline any of the potential negative side effects. So they're getting one side of the story and hearing that these vaccines prevent cancer when there's no proof that that's, in fact, a reality.
Indeed. Now, you know, when I was a school child, they did give us polio vaccines, and of course, polio is a very serious thing, and it crippled a lot of people and so forth. But now I'm surprised to hear that the schools are handing out HPV vaccinations. So
it is surprising. Any vaccine, what people don't realize is it's a medical intervention.
Those types
of should happen in a doctor's office.
Well, are doctors also prescribing these vaccinations for people who come to see them for various complaints?
Oh, yes, and some are being very, let's take one case in particular. One girl who was severely damaged, she's still fighting the effects of it 7 years later after her injections, was told that because she was in college and because she was a science major, she could have a lab accident and be exposed to HPV and get cervical cancer. We had a report from a mother who had an autistic son whose doctor told her that he could be raped and get cancer and die.
Yes.
Those are a little over the top as far as prescribing techniques.
Yes. So they're being handed out quite liberally, and it is amazing how many people are turning to drugs, putting the power outside of themselves. Now, who is paying for all of these vaccinations? In the case of school level, that would be our government is funding this. Is that not true?
Our government is funding it, which people don't often realize that our government funding it means it comes out of the taxpayer's pocket.
Yes.
You're funding it, funding it. Anybody who pays taxes is funding it.
And where are these vaccinations manufactured? Are they manufactured right here in the United States?
They're manufactured all over the world. There are several plants.
Yeah.
Merck is the manufacturer of Gardasil, and GlaxoSmithKline is the manufacturer of Cervarix. There are several plants all over the world for each company. They're manufactured in different facilities.
Now, you mentioned Gardasil and Silgard. I'm on your site at sanevax.org, and I see that you have major categories. And there's a major category called victims, and underneath of that, after you have a vaccine victims memorial, You focus in primarily on Gardasil, Silguard, and Cervarix. And you also focus on some other countries such as India, Spain, and the UK, and some of the stories that are there. And on right on your homepage, there's a carousel of pictures of people who have perished after taking these vaccines and who have become crippled and had all kinds of maladies. And it seems to be that there's quite a number of people who have suffered some very serious ailments and even death right after they were vaccinated. Have you found that there are many people who have been afflicted in this way?
We have found that Gardasil and Cervarix HPV vaccines are responsible for over 75% of the VAERS database.
And what is the VAERS database, V-A-R-S?
It's V-A-R-E-S. It's the Vaccine Event Reporting System.
Yeah.
And it was originally created in the late 1988. It was created. It wasn't instituted till 89, I believe. Not exactly positive on those dates, but it was meant to be a system where any new medical condition that occurred after vaccination was reported. And then the government officials would analyze those reports and decide whether or not these were vaccine-related. Now, the problem is it's not mandatory. Doctors don't have to report. Many doctors don't even know this system exists. And it's estimated, one of the earlier CDC representatives said that less than 1% of all vaccine injuries are actually reported. So you take that and go to, 10,404 emergency room visits reported after HPV vaccines, add a zero or two to that, and you've got a fair picture of the true number, which is really frightening.
And so you've been compiling a lot of research that have been done by laboratories, medicos, and you've found published findings. You're reporting this. You're documenting victims who have had problems. And so the question is there a connection between this and the vaccinations? And this is what you want looked at. You're hoping that some people will open this discussion and explore a little bit further to see if there is a direct correlation between these two events. Is that not true?
That's why you're sounding the alarm. That's all we want, is someone to look at this seriously, scientifically, examine the problem, and if it's not the vaccine, tell us what it is.
Yes, and now you mentioned the FDA. I've done extensive research on the history of the United States, and time and again, I come across so many things that the FDA has and is protecting us from today. And because of their track record of protecting us in so many ways, we perhaps expect that they're going to give us attention when we bring something to their concern. But it seems that the proliferation of drugs and the advertisements for drugs, for everything that you can think of under the sun, has been on unprecedented levels. If you turn on the television, how many of the commercial breaks do you see someone advertising you to sell you pharmaceuticals for one thing or another? And you name it, there's a drug for it. And it's become pervasive.
And
so
a few years ago, one of the problems became even more exacerbated when the FDA started accepting fees from the manufacturers to expedite approval for their products.
I did not know that.
And
where did you discover this?
The FDA's budget comes from these fees.
And where did you discover this, that the FDA will receive expedition fees, if I may ask?
Well, it's straight on the FDA website. They are their user fees from the manufacturer, and it's filing fees for the approval process. It's filing fees for the expedited approval process, and depending on what company you are and how much you can afford, you either go into regular approval or you have the funds to apply for expedited approval, fast track approval.
We have no evidence that this affects the outcome. It's just that it affects perhaps the priority, the queue order in which the requests are processed. But is it not true that doctors who prescribe medication to their patients are given fees from the drug manufacturers? Is that a fact also?
Yes, that is unfortunately a fact.
And that's very interesting. It's
done in an unusual way. Let's take Merck as an example. If Merck manufactures HPV vaccines and several other medications, if an individual doctor only prescribes Merck medications, they are put on a reduced fee schedule for each one of those medications. They're also treated to lunches for their faculty, sales pitches, that type of thing. Those are all.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you have a team of people working with you on this, doing some of the research and contributing to the site. Is that not true?
Oh, absolutely. We have advocates from, I would say at least 25 countries that work strongly with us. They're in constant contact with us. India, Brazil, Argentina, Spain, of course, Scotland, the United Kingdom, Norway, Sweden, the list goes on and on. I can't name each individual because it would take the rest of your hour.
Yes, and I noticed on the site that you are posting ill effects to victims from all over the world. And when you get people reporting in from so many countries, is there a common thread in the stories that they get from where they are that are consistent with the ones we have here in the United States?
Unfortunately, they're almost identical. Autoimmune disorders, paralysis, psychiatric type disorders. In other words, autoimmune disorders, loss of memory, and they're very frequently misdiagnosed. Some of the parents have gone through absolute hell trying to keep their children because they've been accused of causing their child's illness. We've got reports. I had one heartbreaking report of a set of parents who had, because of the adverse effects after HPV vaccines, their daughter was put in a mental institution. The parents knew it was not a mental problem, but they could not get her out of that mental institution until they actually videotaped her eating her own vomit because the people would not feed her. They thought she was had an eating disorder. So they didn't feed her. She ended up eating her own vomit.
These are severe symptoms. And how do we connect these and other symptoms to the vaccinations? Is it because of the timing that so many symptoms have occurred shortly after the vaccinations had been given to them, and because there's so many stories with similar timing that has left people with adverse effects after they were vaccinated? Or is there something else that connects the symptoms with the drugs that they took?
Well,
where do we draw, how do we connect the dots in this case?
We connect the dots by encouraging scientists and medical professionals to look at it, to examine it. What we found a couple of outstanding scientific professionals who have been willing to examine individual cases, and we think that we may be onto something, but it's going to take more research to prove it.
Yes.
We found that Gardasil is, I don't like to use the word contaminated, but the aluminum adjuvant has attached itself to the HPV-16 component of the vaccine via a non-B conformation. And I know that sounds like Greek. It certainly did to me. But basically, if you imagine a strand of DNA as a bungee cord with a hook on each end that is programmed to attach in certain places at certain times. Now, imagine that that hook on the end of the bungee cord is twisted. That twisting, which is the non-B conformation, could make it attach anywhere with unknown consequences. That fact that it exists is proven and scientifically published in peer-reviewed journals. Now, another
and it
team...
Was, it was, I'm going to ask about that. Was it proven as a direct result of the drugs that they took? Was that their conclusion?
Oh, no, no. This is just the vaccine by itself. So virtually anyone that takes it, and we found this contamination in 100% of samples taken from 5 different manufacturing facilities around the world. So this non-B conformation is a risk of totally unknown consequences. We don't know if it will cause cancer. We don't know if it will cause genetic mutations. We don't know if it will cause autoimmune disorders, although all of those risks are associated scientifically with non-B conformation DNA.
Yes. So there's certainly a plethora of physical evidence of symptoms and the anecdotal evidence that so many of these symptoms came after vaccinations, that there may be a correlation because it has happened all over the world and is continuing to happen. And so you're asking for a closer investigation for a possible cause and effect. Have you had any communications with the companies involved? And, of course, you know, there's always innocent until proven guilty, but when it comes to public health and safety, we want to do everything possible to protect people while we're finding these things out. Now, you mentioned Gardasil, Silgard, and Cervarex. Has there been any communication from them regarding these matters to SaneVax?
No, there has not.
Indeed.
We targeted the regulatory agencies because it is their responsibility to be a watchdog. It should not be up to parents to prove that their child had a vaccine injury. It should be up to the manufacturer to prove that it didn't, and it's up to the FDA and the CDC to make sure that that's done. Now,
and you've appealed to the FDA?
Absolutely. We've appealed to the FDA multiple times.
And they granted you audience?
We receive in response the proverbial little pat on the head, go on, there's nothing to worry about.
Okay, okay.
And
now, there have been some parliaments in other countries that have opened an ear to this, such as Scotland and so forth, isn't that so?
Scotland has done a marvelous job. Some of the parents of injured daughters there have taken up the banner and fought like lionesses protecting their children. I'm so pleased with Scotland's reaction. It's just unbelievable. They have taken it to the Parliament. Parliament has responded by questioning, because Cervarex was the main vaccine there up until just recently, Santa Fe Pasteur has answered some of their questions with the typical public relations garbage, but they did answer the questions. But these politicians in Parliament are pursuing the matter, much to their credit.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, vaccinations has become a worldwide multi-million industry, has it not? Now, we've had some wonderful, wonderful things that we've been vaccinated and protected against over the years, and we've developed a great deal of confidence in these things. But sometimes when we do run into the ill effects of lots of things that we take for granted. It's not until after things come. Now, what will be proven and disproven in these stories remains to be seen. But when we look back at the use of asbestos as a heat insulator in buildings, I used to be a high-rise property manager in large cities, and we would have to contract to remove asbestos from pipes whenever we found it. And no one thought that it would be so injurious to lungs. And smoke, we didn't know how bad smoking was, and that became exceptionally popular. And then story after story, it looked like it was causing cancer in the lungs and emphysema and everything else, that it became that cigarettes were not allowed in restaurants and so on and so forth. So, but so many people were afflicted before that happened. So if there are concerns here, it seems that in-depth research in an expeditious and judicious manner would clear any concerns that are not founded and respond to any concerns that are founded. So you're appealing to the FDA, you're appealing to the CDC, and you're putting the word out to the public so that they can be a little bit more informed and read about some of the studies they have, watch the videos that you have on your site, and read about the individual cases of people who have had afflictions after being vaccinated. And have you gotten much response from the public regarding this information that you're putting out, Norma?
We've gotten a tremendous response from the public in the fact that our site views have gone up to approximately 70,000 per month. That varies greatly, but we started only 3 years ago, and I think 70,000 hits in a month is good. It's not near what we need to get the education out there, but it's a whale of a start.
Now, you're not funded for this research, are you?
Not at all.
And so why are you doing this if you're not being paid?
Because I have grandchildren and I have to be able to look myself in the mirror in the morning.
Yes. And so you're passing on the word. You're passing on the word of what you found. And so all the workers, and on the About page, there's a number of workers there. There are unsung supporters contributing information from all over the world and investing a lot of time doing a lot of in-depth research and careful reporting on the site. All of this is volunteer work, isn't it?
Absolutely. All of it is. In fact, the lab that tested Gardasil, the 16 vials of Gardasil for us for contamination, only charged us $1 because he believed that people should know.
Indeed. Indeed. And I see on your homepage at SaneVax, SaneVax.org, that you have your Facebook likes are numbered in the thousands, and all of your social links are here to your profiles on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, MySpace even, Google Plus One, and you also have a donate button here in case anybody wants to help, but there is a tremendous amount of research that has been going on in this. This is basically like a full-time job.
It is a full-time job. And David, yes. Now that you've mentioned the donate button, it would really help if people would donate to the cause, because what we're finding is that government agencies are not responsive to the needs of the public health, and eventually we want to see SaneVax set up a series of laboratories around the world to certify that vaccines are indeed safe, affordable, necessary, and effective, kind of like Underwriter Laboratories does for electronic equipment. That way, at least we can provide medical consumers with some sort of factual information.
Absolutely. That would be helpful, and I'm glad this information is here for people to find out. And when you started out 3 years ago, you just started out with putting some reports up on there, but now I see that the information on the site has grown greatly. You also have outgoing links where people can find out about HPV industry timelines and mechanisms of actions in women, fact sheets, even petition that people can get involved with, more than one of those, your presentation to the FDA, Supreme Court arguments. I mean, really, you have the whole story here, both medically and what actions have been taken to draw attention to this matter. It really is a lot of work.
It has been a lot of work, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
I have a wonderful team. Stephen Tenley in Australia has a daughter who's injured. Rosemary Mathis has a daughter that's injured. Frida Burrell works tirelessly in Scotland and the UK. Just marvelous. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. All of the advocates and scientists and medical professionals that work with us are saints.
Yeah.
There's no other word for it.
Well, it may very well be that this is a time of reform, primarily here in the United States, something that I had first seen years ago is coming at this time. This year, 2013, marks an accelerated entry into a period of reform, and the companies that had expanded the most are going to be the hardest hit. And the expansion of the pharmaceutical companies is immense, actually. And so just by the theory of cycles of timing, when it is time to expand and when it is time to cut back, I believe that this is a time that we're going to be cutting back, pulling up the drawbridge, going within and looking back. When you look back, you do two things. You look back and you evaluate what has been done. And when you see things that you find are very good, very meaningful to you, these things become memorabilia, Americana. We have nostalgia for these things. And we keep them, we remember them, review them. We do historic films like Lincoln and so forth. When we find things that we evaluate as needing to change, then it's in this time, the second half of a cycle, when we contract rather than expand, then we do so by bringing reform. And I believe what may be happening is there is going to be a great deal of reform between now and the early 2020s hitting the pharmaceutical companies very much, because a lot of times, and to give the benefit of the doubt, so many of the times we go into manufacturing things and working with new inventions, proliferating new ideas innocently. When oil was discovered in Titusville, Pennsylvania in the 1850s, and we found it was flammable, and the Duryea brothers invented the gasoline automobile in Connecticut by the end of the 19th century, this was all innocent. Nobody was thinking at that time, well, geez, we're going to pollute the air, we're going to create acid rain.
Exactly.
But then what happens after we use these things, then we start looking at the effects. And so if there is concern that we need to go through to either eliminate concerns or to validate concerns so that we can take corrective action, then these concerns become imminent, because we're talking about human well-being, safety, and even life. And so SaneVax has gotten worldwide notoriety. It's becoming more and more people are turning to SaneVax to get their information and to become more informed. So I expect that what you've been seeing so far in terms of growth, you're going to grow even more because more people are going to find that you're an important source. So as a citizen of the world, I thank you all for what you're doing. That's for certain. That is for certain. Now,
it's simply a matter of conscience. Knowing that these things are happening, we couldn't do anything else than live with ourselves.
Yes. Yes. And so sometimes grassroots, you know, Margaret Mead said, never doubt the power of a small group of people getting together to change things, because that's the only thing that ever did change things. So here we have a little bit of grassroots getting the information out there, and I hope that people will come and find out and ask questions, because there are a lot of questions that are unanswered and a lot of stories that have consistencies that draw concerns. So we should at least look at this. And now, when it's done in schools, is it, you say it varies from state to state, or is this a national program for disseminating vaccinations throughout schools, or is it done at the state level?
Ooh, okay. That's a really long, drawn-out subject, but basically, the CDC will recommend a vaccine to be added to the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes into the... It's federally recommended. Each state has the opportunity to add it to their childhood immunization schedule or not.
Yes.
To date, no state has made it mandatory. Now, even when you say mandatory, it's really not mandatory because almost every state has a method of opting out, but
yes.
Those aren't advertised very well. I guess what I would like to see at this juncture is that politicians realize that vaccines are a medical intervention, and as such, informed consent rules apply.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
If you go to the American Medical Association's website, their definition of informed consent, and there are laws on all 50 states' books mandating informed consent. A patient has to be told the nature and purpose of a proposed treatment. They have to be told the risks and benefits of a proposed treatment. They have to be told alternatives regardless of their cost or the extent to which the treatment options are covered by health insurance. They have to be told the risks and benefits of the alternative treatment or procedure. And they have to be told the risks and benefits of not receiving or undergoing the treatment. Now, this is across the board for medical interventions, except it's not happening with vaccines.
Now, you're providing some very strategic links on your site for people to become more informed on their own. You have links to vaccine injury physicians and medical practitioners and to vaccine injury attorneys and to vaccine-related groups and political action groups all related to this and more, many more through here. So the information is out there to help facilitate asking questions, and there is information to be had. It's not like everything is being kept secret because there's documentation. This is how you built the body of your research, is it not? Just from what you're able to get.
Yes, and it's all documented, and it's all documented via either government sites, government-sponsored sites, or peer-reviewed medical journal articles. We don't publish on a regular – we'll publish news articles, of course, but any of the science is backed by peer-reviewed articles published in medical journals. We're not playing games. We're not trying to destroy anybody. We are just trying to get the information out so that people can access it. I mean, we need for parents to quit doing more research for their next cell phone purchase than they do on vaccines.
Well, you've made it possible for a person to come and find in one place that they can funnel their questions into how you've got things laid out and to the resources that are available to them. You have a news blog, you have a research blog, and you have a citizen speak blog where it – because we have a wonderful freedom of information, and there's a wealth of research that's made available to all of us, and we have the tools in our modern information age, but then not everyone has the time to do this and knows exactly even where to begin. Sometimes it's like walking into a very large library and just seeing floors of bookshelves and saying, where do I begin? But thanks to the work of SaneVax, you've got it all laid out, digested, categorized, and simplified in terms of navigation for a person to be able to come in and find out more if they have questions.
Absolutely.
This is one.
And if they have questions and they can't find the answers, they can contact us. If we don't have it, we'll find it.
Yes. Yes, there's a contact you, a media about area for people to find out more. And I do hope people ask questions because it's very important that we do this and take advantage of this information so that we're a little bit better informed. That's what we want. So my goodness. Now, have publications taken interest in the work that you've done, Norma, at St. Vex?
Yes, actually, we were recently published in a medical journal. We responded to an article by some scientists that were promoting the idea of a 9-valent HPV vaccine, which would add 5 to the current. And their science, as far as we were concerned, was not adequate. We wrote a letter to the journal outlining where we thought those inadequacies were. And after 3 months of peer review, much to the credit of Infectious Agents and Cancer, they published our response.
That's very interesting because, you know, the medical world is an empirical field, and yet they found that your presentation was worth publication in their journal. So,
yes, that's quite a step in the right direction.
Yeah, this is not based on whim. This is based on a great deal of compiling research and gathering stories from all over the world. All right, so it is still elective. So if a parent is concerned about their teenager getting a vaccine, then you're saying that the teenager is not required to take that vaccine. Is that true?
At this point, they are
not
required to take that vaccine in the United States or in Scotland. I believe they have permission slips in the UK, but I'm not positive of that. It varies from country to country.
Yes, yes. Now, since we're talking about vaccines, I know there's a lot of flu vaccines that are out there very often. I can remember in the 1970s taking a swine flu vaccine, and I did not get the swine flu, by the way. I don't know if I would have gotten it otherwise. Have there been any concerns with flu vaccines as well?
There has been a plethora of peer-reviewed published articles regarding the efficacy of flu vaccines. We've got it all on SaneVax. Not all, no. We'll never have it all. But we do have some of it on SaneVax. They've been proven to be less than 70% effective.
Yeah. And are there any concerns of harmful side effects as well?
Well, the swine flu shot that you mentioned was associated with Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a progressive paralysis as a result of neurological damages. Aluminum, in particular, has been associated with a plethora of neurological symptoms. When your neurons are damaged, when your nervous system is damaged, it can present itself as almost any symptom you want to name. Vision problems, hearing problems, problems with smells, paralysis, tics, organ failure, Alzheimer's-like
symptoms.
Now, when
you say aluminum, is that aluminum that's somehow ingested? I'm thinking of the metal, and I'm thinking, well, if I drink a soda out of an aluminum can, do I have to be concerned?
Ah, now that's a very interesting question. When you ingest aluminum, when you eat it, or you're exposed to it by cooking with tinfoil or something like that, 0.25% of that aluminum is absorbed in your body.
Okay.
Which is somewhat of a risk, but not nearly so bad as when you inject aluminum, and a lot of vaccines do contain aluminum, 100% of that aluminum is absorbed by your body somewhere.
And if what is it about aluminum that they're being used in vaccines? Is there a reason for including aluminum in a vaccine?
Yes, the aluminum is there because it causes an inflammatory reaction. It causes your immune system to react not only to the aluminum, but to whatever antigen they've put in the vaccine.
Oh, and we want to stimulate antibodies that are tailored against the infection we want to prevent. Is that right?
That's the theory, yes.
So we stimulate that, and we give them an innocuous version of a virus, let's say, and so that we develop marker antibodies against that will react the same to one that a body that's not harmful to us, because it doesn't contain the active ingredient that does us harm, but is part of that organism. So that these marker antibodies remain in our system, so that when we get exposed to the virus in the future that does have the active ingredient in it, that hasn't been removed, it gets destroyed by our antibodies. Is that the whole scheme?
That is the whole theory. Now, keep in mind that there are studies out there that prove the antibody level from HPV vaccination is between 50 and 100 times the antibody level of someone that has been exposed to HPV naturally. And no studies have been conducted to find out if this increased antibody level means increased protection or it just means increased inflammation that can cause problems.
Yes. So we really do need to do more research. We do live in a modern era where we have been protected from so many things. We have prevented so many diseases. We've wiped out smallpox. We have had miracles. Penicillin turned out to be a miracle drug, and on and on. But sometimes there are concerns that we have to ask is, while we're protecting ourselves from an ill, are there times that we're going to need protection from the protection? And so what we presented in this discussion tonight are some questions. This program is not proposing to know the answers, but we're inviting everyone to go to sanevax.org and read the compilation of research. Some of the stories you may find convincing, and look at some of this. I don't think any of this can be dismissed, and it must be explored further. To whatever outcome the exploration will be. So these dedicated people at SaneVax are asking that the authorities get involved, look into this a little bit more, and help find the answers. And for you as viewers, as you're reaping the benefits of this protective information that's made simple and navigable for you, don't forget there is a donate button on here for these many people who are working full-time jobs to bring this information to you. This is a grassroots movement that is growing. It's almost surprising how fast and how far it has grown in just a few years and the levels in which it's being recognized. But I do believe that's because that we have ended an era of expansion that has brought us larger spending, larger growth in pharmaceuticals and in other areas. And now we're inhaling at this time to go in, to cut back, to look back, to review and reform. So there may very well be major changes in the pharmaceutical industry coming up, and it's all part of the process. This is the way that we have gone forward and stepped back in the ebb and flow of time. It's all part of the natural process, and it's how we grow and how we develop and we protect ourselves. But thanks to the work of people like Norma Erickson at SaneVax, we can equip ourselves as we ask some important questions, as we do periodically, and look at what are we putting in our bodies as we try to protect ourselves from other ills. Do we need to ask, are we creating others? And Norma, you've certainly made it quite possible for us to ask these questions, and I invite everybody to read the stories of people who have gone through some interesting ordeals. very important, very serious for us all to take a look at that. Well, Norma, we're wrapping up here, coming to the end of our hour. Is there any concluding comments you would like to have for people regarding SaneVax?
Come and visit the site. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask. And for heaven's sakes, please do as much research on the next vaccine you administer as you did on your cell phone purchase.
Good words to the wise from Norma Erickson at SaneVax, SaneVax.org. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Cycles of Change radio program, thanking you for listening and asking you to ask questions and be informed. Thank you, and until next week, thank you for listening.